Welcome to the Creative Careers in Medicine podcast with your hosts, Dr. Amandeep Hansra, Dr. Dana Pung, and myself, Dr. Elise Putt. Join us as we talk to inspiring clinicians who have redefined their careers. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Darren Ng, a phlebologist based in Adelaide. He spent most of his med school and junior doctor years balancing his medical training with a professional basketball career. He's since gone on to become a GP and then completed further training in phlebology and cosmetic medicine, as well as balancing some entrepreneurial ventures. He shares a little bit about why he pursued both careers simultaneously, as well as why he did it. And for those of you who have never heard the word phlebology, like me, he explains exactly what it is and how you can follow that pathway as well. Hi, Dr. Darren, and welcome to this Creative Careers in Medicine podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I want to kick us off a little bit with a little bit of an intro. I came across you recently with an article in AusDoc, but for people who haven't heard your name before, can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing now and a little brief summary of what you've done before as well?
Absolutely. So I've been a medical doctor now for almost two decades. I'm a GP who's now working as a phlebologist and cosmetic physician. And I'm also the owner and medical director of Lasers in Medicine here in Adelaide. I help people look and feel their best versions of themselves by improving their skin and their leg vein health. Apart from that, I currently sit on the board of Censors for the Australasian College of Phlebology, and I'm a key opinion leader, or KOL, for a number of device companies in the aesthetic space. Apart from medicine, I actually played professional basketball for about 10 years in the Australian National Basketball League, most notably with the Adelaide 36ers.
That's amazing. I'm very keen to hear about both of these things because, as I said to you, I actually hadn't heard the term phlebology, and I'm very keen to hear a bit about how you've ended up there and what it actually involves. But how do you divide your time between the work that you're currently doing? How much of it is in clinic versus those board and managerial roles?
Yeah, at the moment I spend 4 days a week in clinic, treating patients, seeing patients, and half of that is doing leg vein work and the other half doing cosmetic laser, some cosmetic injectables and energy-based devices. Somewhere in there, I also work on the business side of the clinic. I work with my practice manager, overseeing my staff's work. And we're also running a couple of clinical trials in the aesthetic space at the moment. So we have to squeeze that all in there somewhere as well. But luckily, I've got very good staff around me. And the team is amazing at organizing things at the moment. The phlebology college role, I help train the next generation of phlebology trainees. So there's a bit in terms of having registrars in my clinic at times. Also around exam time, I help to examine at the end of the year exams. The KOL work for me is relatively new. So there's a couple of roles that have just come in this year. So I'll be presenting at a few conferences nationally. And I guess in my spare time, I'll be preparing these talks and just doing lots of prep and research, getting ready for those presentations.
What I was going to ask with your spare time as well is, do you still play basketball?
The short answer is no. However, in the last couple of years, I've played a couple of masters tournaments. I'm over 40 now, so I do qualify for that age group. And I've actually really enjoyed it. I took about 12 years off of basketball completely. But lately, there's a few dads who have our kids at the same club. And we've all played high-level basketball before. So we just got a group of guys together. And last year we were in the Gold Coast playing in the Pan Pacs. And we did okay, but it was good fun. I got through unscathed, no injuries, and that's the main thing.
Yeah, that's quite impressive if you're coming off 12 years off. Now, I want to go back to the very beginning, maybe starting with the basketball journey, because I'm imagining that came before your medical journey. Can you tell me about that and when you started to play high-level or going through school, did you have that as a career goal in mind?
Yeah, well, I started playing basketball when I was around 10 years old for like club basketball, 10 or 11, and wasn't very good to begin with. Slowly progressed. I think my dad was a huge component in that. He loved basketball. He wasn't a basketball player really himself, but he did dedicate a lot of time to helping me train, and he would just stand there for hours after school every day, pretty much, just rebounding the ball to me. And I just shoot hundreds and hundreds of shots. every day and every week would be shooting thousands of shots. So I guess when you add them all up, it really propelled my shooting skill. And lucky enough to make the under 16, under 18, under 20 state teams for South Australia, competed at the national championships for all of those. And at the end of my under 20 campaign, so I was just finished year 12, actually, I was 18, played really well in that tournament and actually was contemplating going off to college in the States to continue the basketball. But basketball was never a career path for me. It was always an extra. It was a hobby and something to keep me fit, but also have slight social group, I guess, outside of school as well. And my parents were always of the mindset that academics comes first and the sport comes second. It just happened that I was good at the second thing, the sport. Yeah. And I think that way I was able to convince my parents that as long as I was doing well at school, I could continue to play the basketball at the really high level in the junior ranks. And so was able to manage all the way through to the end of schooling. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do at the end of school. My dad's a GP. So I've lived through what it's like to be a doctor or that doctor's life. And so I knew that was on the cards. I was super into maths and the sciences, physics, chem, really loved that. So I did want to bring that into my career after uni. And my top two choices for uni were medicine and the second was law engineering. So like totally different careers. Wow. So after that, look, I was lucky enough to get into med in Adelaide Uni. And that was like probably a career point or point in my life where I think my parents were just like, you've got it now. Like you've made it into medicine. It's a solid career. Like as long as you don't stuff it up, you've got an end point where there's a career. And I love being around people and helping people as well as the sciences. So it fit really, really well for me. And going from there, my basketball, since I was in Adelaide Uni, those college offers were kind of on the table. I had coaches trying to convince me to go to Yale or one of the Ivy League schools because my marks were so good. Thinking back, like you just would have thought, oh, that would have been quite an experience. But there was no way that my parents were going to let me give up a spot in medicine here to go off for 4 years. And then who knows what happens after that. So in the end, I just said, I'm not going to go to college. I'll stay in Adelaide, do medicine and see how it goes.
Yeah. Wow. Imagine how different your trajectory could have been. I mean, you could have ended up in the same place, but certainly very different options at that stage. And then by staying and doing med here, did you start playing at the professional level at that point? Or what was the decision that you made starting med school? Because I remember starting med school being, that felt all consuming.
Yeah, absolutely. The real twist came in that first year of med school, about halfway through the year. I was playing in the state league here for the men's comp and was playing really well. I had some massive games. The coach of the Adelaide 36ers at the time, he got in touch and asked me to come out and train with the team in preparation for the 2002 season, which starts around October. And I thought, oh, look, I'll give it a go. They knew that medicine was my first commitment and my priority. So they were like, look, come out and train when you can and let's see how it goes. So luckily at the time also, Adelaide Uni were putting in a student athlete program and they were really looking for athletes that were in their courses to try and be as flexible as they could. And so we were able to work with them as well as the basketball coaches to figure out a bit of a timetable. So I was able to shoot off to training in the middle of the morning, come back to uni after, and it worked quite well for that period of time. After a while, heading into that season, there was a spot coming up for a development player spot, and they basically just offered it to me. And I thought, oh, I don't know how this is going to work. Medicine is pretty full on. The amount of time you need to really commit at that time anyway, was full time. And so I thought, I don't know how we're going to do this or whether I can actually put 100% into either. But once again, like all I'd known growing up was just combining sport, academic. So it was not too dissimilar to what I'd been through in high school. Gave it a go and ended up playing that entire season. There were a couple of opportunities in that where I made the main team and had to travel as well. and the season itself runs from October through to March. So most of the time's in the summer holidays of uni. As long as I could get through that exam period.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Summer holidays and exam period.
And exam period. So that was definitely the most challenging part of combining the two. But essentially, I combined both full-time the entire way through uni.
Oh, wow. That's very impressive. And while you were doing that over uni, did you ever think about going down the pure basketball pathway or taking time out of medicine and coming back to it? Or were you always very set on the having a balance of both is best?
No, I think it definitely was a thought which way. It was even, do I just give up the basketball and just go down and focus like more on medicine? I think growing up, I'm a high achiever. I think most of us in medicine are overachievers. But what really underpinned that, I think, was a bit of a fear of failure. So I couldn't say I'm going to step away from medicine and go into the basketball full time because I was worried about that medical side. Like if I missed a year, how far back is that going to put me? Am I going to have to restudy and relearn everything again? And I was so mindful of the medical career path of just high school, undergrad, med, junior years, specialize, go and work. And I was just like, that was just so solid in my mind that basketball at the time was still to me a hobby, even though I was playing professionally, earning money, everyone else in the team, this was their full-time job. They had nothing else to go back to. So I think I still had that mindset. And so I managed as much as I could. Definitely things like social events, other extracurricular activities, they definitely took a back seat. And I was purely medical school study, basketball training, and then back to study again, essentially.
Yeah, I must have been very full on. Did you ever feel as though one of them suffered for the other, like your exam marks weren't as good as they could have been or anything like that? Or did you have the balance pretty down pat?
When I went through uni in Adelaide, it was very hard to tell what our exam marks were. We had non-graded passes. I don't know if they're still the same.
Yeah, that's what I had too.
Yeah, yeah. So I had no idea. As long as we got that NGP at the end, we were really happy. So I felt like if I were to commit to either one 100%, I think the level would have definitely been higher. I always think about basketball as the main example. If I were to have committed 100% to basketball, how good could I have become? Things like the weight room, extra fitness and conditioning. I think those back then, I didn't do as well as I could have. And there's always just that thought. But I'm really proud of the way that I was able to combine the two. There's not many people who've done it. I have seen a lot of athletes now who I've come across that have done medicine and another sport at a really high level. But it is tricky and you do have to have very good organization and have an element of luck that everything falls into place for you.
Yeah, no, it's very impressive. I'd say you're less than 100% for both medicine and basketball is better than a lot of people's 100%. So overall, a very impressive feat. Then going forward into your junior years, I understand you still continue to play basketball at that point in time. What was that like?
Yeah, so in Adelaide, we had fifth year final exams. And we'll go back to the point, actually, I did take a bit of time off after my final exams and thought, look, I'm through that really hard study period. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to do medicine for 6 months and then do basketball for 6 months. So that's what I did over the course of around 4 or 5 years. I actually did 6 months of internship, completely stopped working for the next 6 months to go play the NBL season. And same again for a number of years in my RMO working days. Back in uni, I just remember being on planes, going to road trips, and we didn't have the digital texts and the notes that you would have now. We had big textbooks, Kumar and Clark, those types of huge textbooks. And I was bringing them on the plane with me, sitting in the exit row next to these 7-footers and my coach. And I just had these books on the tray, studying while we were flying to like Townsville or Perth or Sydney, and studying all the way through, especially that exam time. And that was definitely the most challenging time of my life. But once the exams had finished, it just felt like that pressure was off and I could concentrate a bit more on the basketball and definitely had my best years in those final 4 or 5 years.
How was the hospital side of that? Were the hospital fairly supportive? I imagine that's a fairly unconventional way to be part-time.
Yeah, so IRMO at the Royal Adelaide Hospital, I was an intern there as well, and they were fairly supportive. I think a lot of the doctors and consultants, they knew that I was doing that at the time. The rostering for the hospital was possibly not so flexible. However, I found rotations like ED quite good with the shift work, and I was able to schedule it in. Maybe I come into work and do the late shift 3 to 11 every day or in that roster period so I could train. Basketball training, we would train in the morning for 2 hours. We'd come back after lunch for a weight session, and then we would come back in the afternoon for a shooting session. So there were 3 sessions per day.
Wow.
Most days of the week.
Is that year round or is that leading up to the season?
That is all the way through. So that's pre-season and during the season. If we were playing away from home, it'd be a 3-day road trip. We'd travel the day before and fly back the day after as well. So it's a little challenging, but I think having the 6 months on and then the 6 months off from hospital work really helped because I didn't really need to worry about trying to fit it in with the work roster.
Yeah. Wow. Did you ever find it hard coming back from 6 months off, going back into that medicine mindset or going back into the full-time athlete mindset as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Having 6 months off where you pretty much are switched off from medicine, most of the time the professional sporting life is training, but then the rest of it is almost recovery. So you're essentially relaxing, but letting your body recover, fueling, resting, sleeping, doing rehab, physio. So that kind of life where you don't have to really concentrate after work it was so different. Totally enjoyable, but then you come back into the medicine, and because I'd felt like I'd missed 6 months, I then also put in a bit of extra work to brush up on skills, brush up on knowledge after hours, and vice versa. I think going from the medicine to the basketball season was a bit easier, for sure.
And then you said, was it 4 or 5 years into your working life that you stopped playing professionally? What brought about that transition?
That was more of a, I don't want to say it in a bad way because I loved combining the two, but in the end, it was more of a mental burnout, I think, from doing it for so long. This was a decade later. I'd been a teenager and just gone straight into this. And 10 years later, I was at the point where I was still able to play. So there was a contract on the table for the following season. I was 28, turning 29 at the time. And still, like in these days, that's peak of the career, really, with basketball. But I had reached a point where I was doing GP training as well at the time and was thinking about my career progression in medicine. How much longer could I hold that off and keep pursuing the basketball? And it really came down to, was I enjoying the basketball side of things or not at that point? And for me, the answer was not as much as I had at the start. It was, sometimes it's dependent on the team, on the coaches, what it's like during that period. But I'd lost the enjoyment in playing. The analogy for me, I would liken it to when I was growing up, I played the piano and played that all the way through school. I even took it as a year 12 subject. And I did year 12 performance piano, and I was practicing 3 hours per day in year 11, just like constantly every single day, just trying to perfect this for the one performance at the end. And if you got it right, that was your score. So it was intense, and I really didn't enjoy that. There was no enjoyment for me in playing music. And I finished that exam, and I want to say I didn't actually touch the piano for another 10 years after that.
Wow.
I like didn't actually go back and play at all. Just felt like I'd crossed this hurdle and that was it for me. So I want to say it's slightly similar in terms of combining the two basketball wise, but more so I was just at the point in my career. I didn't enjoy it as much as I used to, and I had another career to go to.
Well, you talked before about how much you had to sacrifice to make both of those happen. So doing that for your late teens and most of your 20s is pretty impressive that it took you that long before you felt like you needed to take a bit of a break from one or the other. You said you're in GP training at that point. Do you know what point in your career that you started thinking about GP and what inspired you to go down that pathway?
Yeah, well, I loved every specialty coming through medical school and as an intern and junior doctor. Everything that I did, general medicine, cardiology, ENT, I loved every specialty. I guess I could find the positive in all of them. And really why I chose GP was during my intern year, I was still playing the basketball, obviously, really high level, and I just needed to select something that would give me some flexibility. And I just felt that GP was the pathway that I wanted to go for. I guess you could say I liked everything anyway. I liked every specialty. So I liked being a generalist. I enjoyed seeing multiple presentations. And of course, I knew what it was like being a GP. My dad was a GP. I could associate with that. I think the main reason was the flexibility that would come with that and the lifestyle. So I could keep combining the basketball at the time. And I loved it. I loved general practice training. It combined so beautifully with everything I wanted to do with the basketball. I was still playing state league basketball as well, so that helped out with that. And just really enjoyed the work. And I had some amazing mentors along the way. And yeah, and I'm really glad that I did it.
It's so nice to hear about, I think I said to you before we started recording, but I am in the process of applying for GP training. So it's nice to hear the good stories about GP, because I think a lot of the people that want to talk about GP are the people that don't end up loving it as well. The people that are quite go into it and are quite happy don't often speak quite as loudly. So from GP, you've obviously gone into a subspecialty from GP in phlebology. When did you find out phlebology existed? Because it might have crossed your radar much earlier than it's crossed mine. And also, how did you go about pursuing that? What sort of extra training did you do in order to end up where you are now?
Yeah, so with general practice, if we go back a bit, I think a lot of your listeners listening to this podcast, because they're interested in something outside of medicine or something within medicine that's just not mainstream. And one of the beauties with general practice is you can make it whatever you want. Once you finish, you have your fellowship, you can really explore different fields, and there's plenty of GPs that are doing subspecialty practices at the moment. After GP training, I went into partnership with my dad and three other partners to own a couple of GP clinics. And my thought process at the time was, we're going to grow the clinic and just really see what the potential is here and perhaps expand from there. I'm a bit of an entrepreneur at heart, so I was eager to get into that field and own a clinic. Part of the growth expansion process was thinking about bringing in some cosmetic treatments. And one of those was laser. We didn't know anything about laser at the time. Very, very naive. But I did know of a doctor in Adelaide who'd been doing laser and had a laser clinic for over 30 years. And her name was Dr. Anne Padbury. And I literally picked up the phone and called her clinic, her office, and set up a meeting with her. I went into the meeting. We sat down in her office. She's got this sizable office in Hutt Street in Adelaide. And I sat there in the patient's seat and we were just going back and forth talking about what we were thinking about. And in about 30 minutes, she convinced me to do phlebology training. Phlebology, I had no idea. I've gone through GP training, not even heard about it. Didn't even know they existed. Still thought, if someone's got varicose veins, let's refer them off to get stripped. Had no idea about this whole community of doctors who were treating chronic venous disease in a way that was minimally invasive and up to date with the latest technologies. So it was really nice to learn about that. Phlebology is a branch of medicine that focuses on vein health. And I primarily diagnose and treat varicose veins, spider veins, chronic venous insufficiency. And we use a mix of ultrasound, medical therapies, and some injecting and endovenous laser techniques to treat those. But it is definitely quite a niche community and a subspecialty. And we come from all different fields: general practice, vascular surgery, dermatology, radiologists. We call ourselves phlebologists and have been through the training as well.
If someone was in the GP or one of those fields wanting to get into phlebology, what would the pathway look like now? Maybe a bit different to what you've been through, because it sounds like it's been quite an evolving field over the last little while.
It definitely is. And we have a lot of GPs who are in our training program. The Australasian College of Phlebology is the largest and most dedicated training program for the field of phlebology. It's a four-year program, so it can sound a little daunting, especially after you've been through so many exams. And I definitely felt that way to begin with. We have a number of supervisors across Australia that help to mentor and supervise the registrars, and they'll spend some time in our clinic. A lot of it is online modules and online Zoom trainings as well. So that would be the program. I think it's a very comprehensive training program, really equips you with the knowledge and the skills to come out and treat. We have many specialists from other fields that do the training, and they haven't had that kind of training in their specialty training before. So no matter where you come from, it's very new. It's all very novel. And the learning curve's a little bit steep if you haven't done ultrasound before. But once you really get on top of that, it's just an amazing and really rewarding specialty.
And are people, when they're doing the training, are they working full-time with phlebology, or are they doing their mixed GP clinic or their other vascular surge lists, and then it's more about the online modules over that point in time? How much of it is clinical?
Yeah, most of the time you are going to be combining it with your work that you're doing. There's no funding for this. It's all privately funded in terms of the training, but we have lots of doctors who are still working, and then part-time they'll be doing the study and then visiting practices to get some hands-on training.
Do you still do mixed general GP sort of work as well, or are you full-time in the phlebology?
I'm actually full-time phlebology and cosmetics now. I stopped GP work around 2 years ago. The phlebology and cosmetic work was getting a bit much, and I also took over the clinic from my mentor, Dr. Padbury, a couple of years ago. So it made sense to stop that commitment to general practice. However, I think I use so many skills that I've learned in general practice in what I do now. And that's a real difference between, I think there's a lot of medical-led and doctor-led cosmetic practices. There's a lot of nurse-led cosmetic practices, but it's nice to have that medical background so you can incorporate patients' medications, you know, how to prescribe if you need to. You can take into account their medical conditions and really come up with a plan that's best for them.
And then the business side of things with all of this as well. You said that you are naturally have a bit of an entrepreneurial streak, but I imagine there's been quite a bit of learning that you've had to do on the clinic managing and owner front as well. Can you tell me a bit about how you found that initially and whether there was any specific ways you learnt the trade?
Yeah, absolutely. I've had to learn on the job with the business side of things. Look, I can't say I've made all the right decisions going through, and there's definitely things you look back and think, oh, I could have managed that differently. My advice to anyone looking to get into clinic ownership or the business side of things is don't be afraid to get some help. I am not one to say like I know everything or it's my way or the highway. At the moment, I actually employ a business consultant, and I have done for the past year or so, to really help us navigate through our business and how we can actually maximize what we're doing. The other part of this is having really good staff around. Hiring and firing, I suppose you could say, is so, so critical to how the business will perform, what the culture of the business is going to be like. And you really do need to spend a lot of time thinking about that or talking to people who know a bit more about how you should hire, what type of characters you should, because if you've made the wrong decision, it just puts you back so much. But a lot of it is self-development. So I've researched a lot into how businesses run, taken help and talked to people, my mentors, business consultants, and just harness a lot of their knowledge to combine it into what I do today. And I'm definitely still learning. I'm by no means the best business owner, but I really love that side of things as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. You've done so many things that are seemingly quite disparate, but obviously you've had passion and natural ability towards all of them as well. You've talked a little bit about the transition points in your life, but if there's anything that you wish you could tell to your younger self, if you could talk to your 18-year-old self now, what would you tell them?
I think the biggest thing I would say, and I do tell this to a lot of kids who are coming out of high school, even their parents, is that you've got plenty of time. When I was going through that, I felt like the whole period for me is such a blur. I was combining many different things at the one time, and I wish I could have, in the moment, just gone, hang on, this is what I'm doing and let's take it all in. I was so focused on doing one thing, then getting to the next job, doing the next job, etc., that I didn't really feel like I had enjoyed each profession at the time. So I would say you've got plenty of time. There was this internal pressure to finish it all as quickly as I could without having a gap. I could not understand why people wanted to have a gap year. Like, it was just a year of, you know, not progressing. And I just felt that was just not what I wanted to do. And I couldn't see it. But now I totally understand it, having been through it, that if you're talented and you are passionate in something, go and explore the opportunity and see how far it can take you. Because I might have gone back and said, I'm young, in 4 years' time, I can come back and start a medical career or work my way to get into medicine. Let's go to college in the States. I wouldn't have met my wife and I wouldn't have had the family I do now, but you're just so young. You've got so many years. If you can afford to do it, then I would say go and explore those opportunities and do it. You can always come back. Like, our minds are super sharp for many decades. You can study, you can put in that work later. And that's definitely the main thing I'd go back and tell myself, just not to rush and sit down and enjoy it all.
Yeah. I wonder what could have been if you had gone down that, going to the States and professional over there, even that pathway could have looked like.
Yeah, I think at the time, my main skill in basketball is shooting the basketball. So a three-point shooter, and that's what I've been known for. The generation of basketball that I came through and played at, we didn't have free range, really. We still had these big 6'11", 7-footers who would play inside the paint and we'd throw it in. A player by the name of Steph Curry came along about 5 years later and totally changed the game. All the professional players, all they do now is shoot three-pointers. And if you can do that, you're one of the most valuable players on the court. So I do often think, you know, what might have changed in that time if I went differently or went to America to play, or if I just played a little bit longer.
The final question that we ask everyone that comes on our podcast is, if you could have a alternate universe where you did something completely different to the things that you currently do or have done, do you have another dream career that you've never pursued?
The simple answer would be I'd be an entrepreneur of some sort because it's in my blood. But a little bit left field, I actually went and played a year professionally in Singapore in 2008. And I played for a team called the Singapore Slingers, which was still part of the National Basketball League here in Australia. So I lived there and experienced the culture. And at the time, social media like Twitter, Facebook, Insta were all starting to gain a bit of traction. And I'd met a couple of people there who were a bit techie and they were like, you should start a blog. Like, blogs are going to be the big thing. And I thought, oh, okay, look, I've got all this time. I'm just training in the morning a couple of times and I've got a lot of time during the day. I'm going to sit down at my laptop and try and start this blog. And they gave me a few pointers and I created this blog that was about just really documenting my time in Singapore and in Asia, playing games, the results, how I was feeling, the new shoes I bought, all kinds of things like that. And it actually got really big. We were having per month, I want to say 40 or 50,000 visitors.
Oh my goodness.
To the blog at the time. And a lot of them were basketball fans across Australia. So I think in an alternate universe, I would be a blogger. And I do like writing and putting things into written form. And I think I did that well. And it was just nice to be able to come up with a format and see what worked, get a lot of different types of comments that you need to deal with. But yeah, I think a blogger would be something I would do.
Yeah, wow. That's very of the times as well. I distinctly remember that era. The blog was really on the rise. How did it come to an end? Did it just fizzle out as you had other competing commitments or?
Yeah, so I actually moved back to Adelaide to play for the Adelaide 36ers again. And because it just didn't feel like it fit what I was doing at the time and I was engrossed in medicine, I just let it slip and basically it's been disabled now just for a number of years. So yeah, I think I wonder if I kept on doing it, what would happen. But in the end, too many other competing interests.
Maybe you'll return to it once you drop some of your current commitments. You'll find time again.
Yep.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and thank you for sharing a very creative career despite still working predominantly in the clinical space, which is something that I love to share here because we want all sorts of people doing their creative pursuits along the way.
I've had a great time chatting, so thanks so much, Elise, for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Creative Careers in Medicine podcast, a proud member of the Talking Health Tech podcast network. We hope that we'll see you at our upcoming conference, which is taking place Saturday, August 23rd and Sunday, August 24th in Melbourne. We will be bringing together inspiring speakers from all walks of medicine and an equally inspiring audience that we'd love to have you as a part of. Follow us on socials and subscribe to our newsletter so you don't miss any announcements. The Creative Careers in Medicine podcast acknowledges the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognises the continuing connection to lands, water and community. We pay our respects to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures and elders past, present and emerging.